state, this horribly dysfunctional state, are met with a heavy-handed, ham-fisted slapdown and jail time for a crime that doesn't even carry any. For misdemeanors. And that's the reality. That is this reality. So it's time for me to get out of here. The next time you hear from me, it will be from back at the home studio. Thank you all very much for all you do to keep this going. Thank you for your kind contributions. If we can get out of July and get started in August, what a relief that'll be. 15 people at $10 a piece, and we're done for July. Thank you for all you do in contributions, in ideas, your calls, your email, your advocacy, and so many of you are doing it, such as Larry described. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox for all he does to keep things all squared up. Thank you, Ben Birch. It is a heroic effort that Ben Birch makes at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, always go to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it's Monday again.
Hi,
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We call what we do here Conversation Radio, and it really is all about the conversations we have here. It's a little effort that's been several years in the making now, and unlike anything else going on anywhere else. We are, of course, still broadcasting live from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, the AHCE campaign. You can learn all you need to know about the AHCE campaign simply by going to AHCEACT.org. I think we're going to have some more signers after the work that's gone on in the last week or so. I think we're going to have some more signers on to the bill, H.R. 5959. But the fact of the matter is, this will be the last broadcast from Capitol Hill. Tomorrow is a travel day, but we're going to try to get out of here. Horn intern Ferg and I are going to try to get out of here in time to be home for showtime, assuming, of course, that the interweb tubes back at the home studio, back at the mansion, hold up. It's been a dodgy proposition lately. But everything appears to be working for now, so we will cross our fingers and not tempt or in any other way challenge fate, and just hope that it holds together. We are coming near an end to the month of July, a merciful, we hope, end to the month of July. Everything kind of hit the fan beginning June 29th with the derecho, what was referred to this past Saturday as a land hurricane. Yeah, you could make that argument. Speaking of Saturday, Saturday was a very, very special day. We got up and got out of here, and, you know, like I said, this is an endeavor that's been going on for a number of years, and there are still a lot of people we haven't met. Who haven't met me, haven't met the family, whatever, and that we in turn have not met. But that list got shortened by one person on Saturday. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, was visiting family over two states away, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Yeah, two states away. And actually got on a train and rode all the way over to Washington, D.C. We met her at Union Station, and we spent the day at the Stop the Frack Attack rally on the West Lawn of the Capitol here in Washington, D.C. A good gathering of 1,000 or so people from all over the country and all over the world who were vitally interested in seeing the torment and the human rights disaster of fracking be ended. It went on. There were folks there. I mean, Idaho, Texas, Colorado, West Virginia, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New York, and even Australia were at this rally. 350.org's Bill McKibben spoke, and spoke eloquently of the need to end this ongoing disaster before the avarice monsters, the greed monsters of the hydrocarbon industries make this planet unlivable. It was an amazing day, made more so by getting to run around with Texas Betsy. We had a lot of good discussions. It was a joy to finally meet her after a lot of years of working together. And we talked a lot about what we were witnessing there with the rally, and where it needs to go and what it needs to be. And by the end of the afternoon, I guess it was about 4:30 when we went back to Union Station. And Betsy awaited her train back. But it really was. It was a lovely afternoon. But God, was it hot! Mercy sakes! But they were well supplied and well equipped and had planned well. Plenty of water for everybody. Medic staff folks walking around with spray bottles, misting people down. It was cooling and very, very nice. So it was. It was a lovely, lovely Saturday. As was the goodwill in the intention of the folks gathered to see both their environment and their ability to go on being humans on this little planet, the only planet we know of, really, that will support human life, or any life for that matter. There is, as that one sign I saw stated so eloquently, there is no planet B. So this is what we've got to work with. And the sense of urgency was very much present, and it was very pleasing. It was very pleasing, as a matter of fact, to hear a number of folks wrapping the horrors of mountaintop removal into discussions of fracking and other environmental disasters. There is an understanding that has taken root that all of these things are interconnected. And I really, I'm convinced that that's the only way we win. That's the only way we succeed in this struggle, is understanding that everything is part of it. Now, from my standpoint, I think one of the most important things, I think, about the struggle against mountaintop removal is the fact that it is winnable. This is what we need, a win, and this is a place where we can get a win. So thanks very much to Texas Betsy for coming over to D.C. and spending an afternoon with us. It was a joy. And I hope it gets, and I hope it, I hope we get to do it again. That was Ferg in the background saying, I loved every minute. Like I said, though, today, tonight is the last broadcast from D.C. We hope to be home in time for a broadcast tomorrow and a regular broadcast week thereafter. In terms of programming notes, I should also let you know that a week from today, if you recall, before the derecho hit, Dr. Bill O'Brien's PRISM West Virginia Summer Academy had been scheduled to take place in the first week of July. Well, the derecho took care of that, and so it was rescheduled and will begin on Monday the 6th of August and continue through to the following Monday. And we will have live coverage of the entire Summer Academy for you, both in terms of video and in terms of audio. You'll be able to get it on the regular Horn stream. Plus, you can go to ustream.tv and look for PRISM, PRISMWV, and find the video stream there as well. And it will be, as the last two summer academies have been, utterly fascinating. But the downside of that is that we won't have a regular nightly broadcast, but instead the files of each presentation will instead go up for your listening pleasure via the podcasting RSS feed at whiterosesociety.org. So there we go. And that'll take the better part. Well, that'll take up the week. I think PRISM is so very important because I have learned so much about the origins of this country, and they are not, if you've never listened to Dr. Bill or any of his guests before, you will find out that some of what you were taught in school is not necessarily factual. And you will also have the means by which to refute these ignorant right-wingers who make up history on the fly. Well, you know, when the founders got together and responded to the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor by fortifying the Alamo, right? Yeah. So do tune in. I think there are members of the Horn family who would tell you that it is an absolute treat that week. But of course, this is more than simply the beginning of the broadcast week. You know that. We reserve Mondays for something special. Because usually, after a weekend has passed, we are just a swimming in to stupid. You know, right wingers left to their own devices and that sort of thing. And that is why, as a matter of fact, we refer to Mondays on the Horn as Moran Monday on the Horn. A day dedicated to right-wing morons. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. Get your program. This is the program that you can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. No, this is Moran Monday on the horn, and for less than a nickel per hour of broadcasting, you can step behind this thin cybernetic veil and witness crazy morons, goofy morons, ignorant morons, hateful morons, criminally insane morons, political morons, and the only thing they all have in common is they are right-wing and repig-licking morons. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. No, really. I mean, this may be one of the, just from the way things have looked, this has the potential to be one of the most busy Moran Mondays that I've lately seen. I mean, stupid is everywhere. It's like the heavens opened up and rained stupid instead of rain on this drought-parched country. More stupid we don't need. More morons. Morons we have oplenty. We are moron poor in this country, you know that? But we will open up Moran Monday with a note from Ray. Ray wrote earlier today to say two quick things. It's clear now, I think I know where he's going with this. It's clear now that if Romney is elected, he will be Israel's bitch, even to the point of war with Iran. A horrible prospect that can't be allowed to happen. Second, says Ray, my nominee for Moran Monday is our sports dads. I went for a bike ride yesterday and stopped by a park. Some dad was out with his two little boys practicing baseball. In a violent, enraged tone of voice, he berated and belittled the kids without even a tiny bit of humanity. Baseball was obviously much more important than all the damage this asshole was doing to his sons, and maybe generations to come. Says Ray, I wanted to kill the guy. Yeah, there's that whole want of perspective thing that infects parents where sports are, you know, sometimes it's ballet, sometimes it's gymnastics. I mean, those are sports. Well, ballet is an art. But a lack of perspective can infect the process. And, yeah, I never got those. I never fully understood those Little League folks either. But the larger point that Ray makes about Willard Romney, you know he's in Israel now. The mind boggles. You know, I can just imagine him looking at the Jewish leaders in Israel and say, you know, I'm Jewish too. What? Oh yeah. Absolutely. And did you know what I wanted to be around for was when he explained how the Indians, the American Indians, you know, the Lakota people, the Blackfoot people, the Cree people, the Muscogee people, the Haudenosaunee people. Yeah, that they're the lost tribes of Israel. Yeah, explain that one. Explain that one to us, would you, Willard? Or, you know, or don't. Because it's just a little much. But that wasn't the end. No. Willard has been a busy moron, but I understand what Ray is saying about him being Israel's little play toy. Because honest to God, I went down to get a bottle of iced tea a little bit ago, and I saw today's, and you know, you got to understand, it's kind of a rarity for me. I saw today's hard copy Washington Post. Now, interestingly, I went looking for the story online and I could not find anything with the same headline. But it was enough, that headline on the hard copy of the Washington Post, to give me a case of the blind shivers. What was it? It was this. Romney, containment, Romney, containment of Iran, not an option. And you just see that kind of walk, you're just, you know, walking out of the little store, got your tea with you, and you walk out of the store and you look over and you glance at it, and you know, I had to do one of those W.C. Fields double takes. Containment, not an option. Because I don't know about your brain, but inside my brain, the first thing that happened was this sort of, what the, not containment, not, well, if containment's not an option, then what is the option? I mean, all of a sudden, everything just sort of went fast forward and then slowed down real fast as I looked back at that newspaper. Containment, not an option. And I felt like I was living in a bumper sticker world. You know, the one where you're looking at the bumper sticker that says, war is not an option. Or something you see around here, those delightful coexist bumper stickers. You will never see a coexist bumper sticker on Willard Romney's automobile, whether there's a dog on top of it or not. You just won't. Merciful God. Containment, not an option. Well, if containment of Iran is not an option, and this, of course, presumes that Iran has done something that needs to be contained, of which there is little or no proof whatsoever. If containment is not an option, then doesn't that mean that the only available possibility is the wholesale slaughter of Iranian people? And the question is, how many millions of Americans are there? Yeah, let's do that. We've been wanting to bomb Iran ever since they took over our embassy. Sandra, don't circus music. Don't stop the music. But what music do you play for? What is zoo music? Because it feels. I don't know. I felt like I was out amongst the hyenas and the jackals and the vultures, because that's what Repiglickens are. Sitting there slathering for somebody else to go do the dirty work of creating war and horror and bloodshed. Containment is not an option. Isn't that another way for Willard Romney to say that what? Genocide is? I mean, this Moran Monday may wind up being, in large part, the first ever Willard Romney Memorial Moran Monday. Because there's a boatload of it. And the one, because, you know, I'm sort of turned this way or tuned into that kind of thing. The culture comment? Did you catch culture comment? Dr. John, because I know if you saw this one, Dr. John had to just be running around the room and screaming and bouncing off the walls. The culture business? Willard declaiming on the vast superiority of the Israelis over the Palestinians? You know, it's like what I saw in the opening of the opening ceremonies. You know, the Olympics, where they accidentally showed one member of the Palestinian team, and you could practically hear the folks in the truck saying, Cut it, cut it, go to commercial, go to commercial. Oh, dear God, cut it. What? And not even so much as a Bob Costas, and here's the Palestinian, because they only showed one. But boom, cut to commercial. And then we get the Romney World Tour, Romney Shambles version of it, what, earlier today? With this culture comment? It's mind-blowing. He said, and, you know, I'm not making this up. This is not satire. This is not parody or sarcasm or... No. He really, really said this. Willard Romney said... And in Israel, for God's sakes. I'm almost grateful for the fact that we don't have audio of it. He had a fundraiser over the weekend for a bunch of wealthy donors in Israel. And maybe I'm just politically naive, but since when do you leave the country to go and do fundraising? None other than Radio Rwanda's, you know, Fox, Greta Van Susteren complained over the weekend that the press traveling with Willard Romney are being treated like a petting zoo because they get kept on the bus, can't ask questions, and are just looked at by spectators. Oh, look, there's the press, Muriel. I mean, Greta Van Susteren. And one of the things that a lot of the journos were ticked off about was the fact that they weren't allowed to attend this fundraiser that they had been promised that they would be allowed to attend. And now we kind of understand why Willard didn't want them there. This is the quote. I come here and I look out over this city and consider the accomplishments of the people of this nation. Hello, Cleveland. And I recognize... No, okay, Willard didn't say that. I come here and I look out over this city and consider the accomplishments of the people of this nation. I recognize the power of at least culture and a few other things. As you come here, see the GDP per capita, for instance, in Israel, which is about $21,000, and compare that with the GDP per capita just across the areas managed by the Palestinian Authority, you know, as opposed to saying occupied by Israel, which is more like $10,000 per capita, you notice such a dramatically stark difference in economic vitality. Now, published reports have gone on to note that Palestinian people were rather offended, insulted, disgusted by these remarks. Of course there's a broad disparity in the GDP between Israel and Palestine. Israel has its boot on the neck of Palestine. That's like saying there's a difference between how the two peoples breathe. Well, if somebody's boot is not on your neck, you're going to breathe a lot better. But that operative phrase, I recognize the power of at least culture and a few other things. And ultimately, he was getting at two books that he had read, one of which was Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. And wow, did I get a whole lot of a different message out of that book than apparently Willard did. I'm thinking I read the book and Willard didn't.
Maybe he was reading the book of, maybe he was using his seeing stones to read Guns, Germs, and Steel. I don't know. But he said that the gross domestic product of Israel is proof that the Israelis have a superior culture to that of the Palestinians. I can't think of anything more disgusting unless I think all the way back to when Rahm Emanuel's father said to someone in regard to Barack Obama and Israel, well, it's not... what is it? You know, he was referring to his own son. He said, it's not like he's some Arab mopping the floors. Culture. Superior culture. Now, being as how he was in Israel when he said this, I gotta ask the question. Anybody out there remember a time when another nation projected cultural superiority over an oppressed minority? I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but was there ever a time when, for instance, school children would turn around and look at members of a minority and say, I smell them? Yes, as a matter of fact. We know what that time was. So when Willard Romney does that, isn't he channeling something that you really don't want to channel in a place like Israel? Yeah, see, you get your choice, Marty. 1930s Germany or 1950s U.S. Pick one. And he went on. He went on to say, the Romney camp got really upset because, well, you're taking it out of context. Okay, well, here's the rest of the context. He said, you know, just like the United States and Mexico. And, of course, me being me. Would that be I being I? I being me? Can we split the difference? I immediately thought of, who was it, Porfirio Diaz, who said, poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States? Yeah, Dr. John, he did. And see, I immediately thought of you the minute I read this thing. Are you kidding me, says Dr. John? Complete ignorance of geopolitics much? Why can't U.S. fundies talk to Israelis without losing their damn minds? Dr. John says, meaning Romney, he's got a real fascist code problem, doesn't he? Shades of the Anglo-Saxon heritage issue. He's just not good at Southern subtle. Bless your heart. God love him. He's just not very good at it. Will somebody please bring Willard Romney home before he... God. It was stunning. Cultural superiority? Sandra, why'd you stop the circus music, Bob? You need it throughout this Moran Monday. I was just afraid we'd overload the stream. But yeah, but we don't just need that. No, we need the smell of the popcorn. We need the roar of the grease paint and the smell of the crowd. This is mind-boggling. Take a minute. You know, this goes back to what Ray said. Take a minute and just let it rattle around that this guy wants to be in charge of the nuclear arsenal. Ooh. He says that Israel is culturally superior to an Arab culture, says that containment is not an option with regard to Iran, says that the President of the United States doesn't have a sufficient appreciation for our Anglo-Saxon heritage, you know, completely forgetting that Barack Obama's mama was, you know, white woman. Probably had some of the Anglo-Saxon going for him. And wants, you know, if this guy, I guess based on those studies about how psychopaths are valued, that's the studies about how sociopaths are valued at the highest levels of corporate structures because they can operate without conscience. Conscience doesn't get in their way. Well, then I guess that means that a guy like Willard Romney would be perfect there. But if the very idea of a guy who goes around the world talking about cultural superiority and saying that that containment of Iran is not an option and therefore implying that genocide is, if the idea of him wanting to be president of the United States and in charge of foreign policy and in charge of our nuclear weapons cache, if that doesn't give you the turtle squirts, nothing will. I wanted to run, and all of a sudden I looked up and went, I'm in Washington, D.C. I want to go home, Auntie M. But there wasn't no heel clicking to be done. No, it feels a little bit like that scene from the Blues Brothers. You know, we got a full tank of gas and we're on a mission from God. And the mission is going to be to get home. Of course, we'll be coming back. There's more work to be done. I'd like to bring Agnes back with me. She's awesome in a congressional office. Yeah. Cultural superiority? I mean, doesn't... just gut check here with Dr. John, you know, because he's the Horns resident archaeologist and anthropologist. Isn't the idea of cultural superiority? I mean, didn't that go out with like High Button Greaves? I mean, didn't that go out with Spats? Cultural superiority?
Now, see, there goes that Kincaid again. He's going to introduce some sort of moral relativism that don't have no black and white in it and doesn't recognize that there are some cultures that are just better than others.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've been in a classroom, high school, university, what have you. It's been a very long time. But the little time that I did spend there, I was taught that one analyzes culture in terms of its ability to successfully exist within its environment, within its time, within its technology. I mean, for instance, just because I'm constantly harping on them, let's take the year 1000 of the current era. In the year 1000 of the current era, the peoples on the Yucatan Peninsula of this hemisphere understood the concept of zero. They had worked out complex mathematical formulas for architectural purposes. They had a calendar that would not be rivaled in accuracy until the 20th century. They had plumbing at the same time, in that same time period, when my white European forebears were mucking around. They were a Monty Python.
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
mucking around in the dark ages and wondering when they were going to be afflicted by demons that would make them get sick. But both cultures managed to survive. And you can't say that the Mayan culture was better or worse than the European culture, except unless you measure them against their ability to exist in their own context. You know, the one thing that I couldn't help reflecting on is that Willard claims to have read Guns, Germs, and Steel. Well, very much as is the case, you'll remember how I waxed eloquent for a month and a half about Charles C. Mann's 1493. You really need to read that after, I mean, you don't have to, but you should read it after having first read 1492 to understand the before and after effect of the Columbian Exchange. Well, so too with Jared Diamond's work. And there are objectionable things in Jared Diamond's work, no getting around it. But he makes arguments about how landscape affects the development of culture. And he makes the argument that those three seminal things, guns, germs, and steel, are what led Europe to conquer the rest of the world, as opposed to, saying, a South Pacific society from conquering Europe. Clayton. You hadn't been to your Klan meeting lately now, have you, Bob? No, I'm sorry. I think it's just like the Rotary. If you miss three in a row, you're gone. But the thing with Jared Diamond's work is there's another book that comes after Guns, Germs, and Steel. And that's not three words. It's just one. And it's a very important word. Because where Dr. Diamond focused on cultural success in Guns, Germs, and Steel, in the sequel to the book, he focused on failure. And the name of that book is Collapse. And so if I was in a position where I could say, hey, come here, Willard, put down the seeing stones and come over here. Willard, listen, Willard, you know how you read that Guns, Germs, and Steel? Or somebody read it for you and gave you a synopsis, or you read the Spark Notes or whatever? Okay, Willard, you got to read Collapse, because there are several examples in there, Willard, of how human beings have screwed themselves out of their ability to have a culture at all, or had it driven down to a bare minimum. Dr. Diamond examines Iceland. He examines the culture of the Anasazi culture, the Chaco Canyon culture of the American Southwest. He examines the Maya people, because the Maya are a lesson in how to F yourself right out of your own civilization. And Easter Island, I think, he also analyzes. You know, Rapa Nui. And there are prescient lessons, and I think that's what Dr. Diamond intended. There are prescient lessons for us in that. You know, what we were doing this past Saturday was, in a way, contemplating the lessons of all of that. Because even though Senator Jim Inhofe says he don't have to know science in order to contest the scientific peer-reviewed fact of global climate catastrophe, even though he says that, it ain't necessarily true. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. Yes, the idea of cultural superiority did go out about 50 years ago. Anyone in the social sciences recognizes that Anyone in the social sciences recognizes that for the thinly veiled racism it was and is. in order to suggest that Israelis have a higher gross domestic product and a higher per capita income, in order to suggest that that is because they are culturally superior to Palestinian people who've had a boot on their neck since when? 1967? And before, really? You've got to be making a whole bunch of assumptions that cannot help but be racially biased. And I would submit to you, racially motivated. And yeah, what Ray wrote in his email that we started the program with is the truth. It is embarrassing enough to watch this country get... Well, to watch us bow and scrape, it's embarrassing. But to know that Willard Romney doesn't think we bow and scrape enough? Like I said, this may very well be the Willard Romney Memorial Moran Monday. This guy is dumber than George Bush. He really, really is. I mean, between Willard Romney and George W. Bush, I've about come to the conclusion that there's not much to be had at Harvard. No offense. But God Almighty, I wonder, you know, I feel a hell of a lot better about my little hillbilly diploma. Cultural superiority? You know, it kind of boggles my mind. My grandfather was still mining coal in 1948. My other grandfather was still selling cars. He had a with regard to the former, he had 20 more years of life left in him. He just didn't know it. And with regard to the latter grandfather, he had 12. But starting in 1948, each of those men began working in part to support Israel. Because we send billions, began sending billions, and we continue sending billions. For the rest of their lives, some portion of every workday, whether it was on the car lot or in the bowels of the earth, they labored for Israel. It's just a fact. And they labored so that, among other things, Israel could have a universal healthcare system. And so if you want to talk about once you get past the cultural superiority argument, and once you get past containment is not an option argument, if the American people really wanted to know what it feels like to have their noses rubbed in it by an elite snob like Willard Romney. Well, he had that for us too. Because I guess he's trying to show off his economic cred or whatever. But he felt the need to lecture the Israelis. Among other things, he said, for an American abroad, you can't get much closer to the ideals and convictions of my own country than you do in Israel. Really? Israelis believe that Jesus and the devil are brothers from planet Kolob? I'll be... But he went on. And this is the nose-rubbing part. He said,
Do you realize what healthcare spending is as a percentage of the GDP in Israel? 8%. You spend 8% of GDP on healthcare. You're a pretty healthy nation. And I guess the trees are probably just the right height, too. You spend 8% of GDP on healthcare. You're a pretty healthy nation. We spend 18% of our GDP on healthcare, 10 percentage points more. That gap, that 10% cost, compare that with the size of our military. Our military, which is 4%, 4%. Our gap with Israel is 10 points of GDP. We have to find ways, not just to provide healthcare to more people, but to find ways to fund and manage our healthcare costs. But he couldn't say the magic words. Universal health care. Everybody bears the risk. Everybody's in the same system. And of course, people who have not had insurance, people who do not have insurance, prop that up every year with the money that we continue to send to Israel. They've had a national health insurance law since 1995. The people pay 40%, the state pays 60%. Israel has a lower infant mortality rate. Now, you can't say that about the Palestinians. Now, you'll have that one. You'll have those higher infant mortality rates when you're culturally inferior. God, smack me. That just feels dirty coming out of my mouth, even though it was sarcasm. No, Israel has lower infant mortality rates than the United States, and their heart disease rate, their mortality rate from heart disease is half of the rate in the United States. So I guess you, me, the rest of America, I guess Willard Romney had to go to Israel to look back at us and say, hey, suck it. Because that's what he did. Really and for true. Michael writing in, Bob, you trying to tell me Willard had time to read Guns, Germs, and Steel between Battlefield Earth and the Twilight series? Not buying it. Yeah, see, me neither. I don't know, maybe he had it on books on tape or something, you know, when he was driving to Canada with Seamus strapped to the top of the car. And I can't find the story right now, but no, he was apparently also citing some economic guru whose name doesn't, Jared Diamond argues that the land has a lot to do with cultural development, and who was the other guy? I'm sorry, it's lost, but no, he says that it ain't that. But do you understand why I thought this was going to be a pretty bizarre Moran Monday? And then the right wing, the right wingers, have columns out there like Romney captures Jerusalem. I mean, you want to hear some agitprop? You want to hear some genuine propaganda? Because I got some. This is from Pajamas Media. Speaking to an often cheering group of about 400 people in Jerusalem, Governor Mitt Romney gave a speech less notable for what he said than for the fact that the audience believed he was sincere in saying it.
At a beautiful outdoor setting with the old city in the background, Romney declared his strong support for Israel using phrases often heard from American presidents. He made president and mouth noises. He also claimed his view that Jerusalem is Israel's eternal capital. The difference, of course, is that those listening were less inclined to think that when President Barack Obama said similar things to AIPAC meetings, he was describing his own views and policies. What? Man, the monkeys are flying out of the butts tonight. Not allergic to Israel's center-right, Romney quoted former Prime Minister Menachem Begin twice and referred to my friend Bibi Netanyahu. Yeah, fellow sociopath. Yeah, they were in business together. Obama wouldn't have cited either man. It is known to loathe Netanyahu. Really? Really? I missed that press release. President Obama loathes Benjamin Netanyahu. I get the notion from Barack Obama he doesn't loathe anybody. He's not a loather. Romney and Netanyahu have known each other for years. The Begin quotes were significant, that Israel will never again let its independence be destroyed, a reference perhaps to Israel's need not to be completely subservient to America's current president, and that if people say they want to destroy you, then believe them. He also used a phrase called the reality of hate. It's when he was talking about, and of course this is pure projection, how many Arab and Muslim forces feel about Israel. Containment is not an option. What about the reality? You know what? There's more than one reality to hate. Hate has more than one reality, I think I could say a little better. Because when you start talking about cultural superiority, it's pretty clear at that point that you're at play in fields of prolific hate. Ron and Raleigh writing in. Containment is not an option, Ron writes. Hey Bob, how many Iranians do you think Willard has ever spoken to? Good question. I'm guessing less than zero, you know, in light of the fact that he considers Iranians to, you know, be less than zero. A very good question indeed. You reckon Willard ever wonders what had happened to the, you know, because he believes in things like souls. You ever reckon what Willard wonders about the soul of, you know, say a little girl who via that filthy, filthy phrase, collateral damage, a little girl who winds up being, you know, one of those who got to be 9 but doesn't get to become 10. What do you reckon Willard thinks about her and her soul, if she has one?
Well, I'll tell you what, if we happen to blow her up, I'll see to it personally that she's baptized after death, and then she can be one of my slave women on my planet when I die. Containment is not an option. Now, I don't know about you, but that's the kind of thing that'll give me the cold sweats at 3 o'clock in the morning. Containment is not an option.
Okay, hang on here. No, Ron continues. He says, this guy is such a dolt. Yet the majority of white people will probably vote for him. Makes me wonder if there isn't something in the water. No, that's one. No, that's one of those where you just kind of put your hands up in the air and go, "White people." It's too damn much. It is just too damned much. Oh, and by the way, I was talking about the soul of that little girl. I got to thinking about that because of yet another Romney story out there today. Texas Betsy sent this along. But it kind of got all over the web earlier. The laptop here is slowed to an absolute crawl. But it turns out there's a new biography of Willard out there. There's a new biography of Willard out there that talks about his days, you know, back before he was governor of Massachusetts, when he was just a humble millionaire Mormon bishop. Okay? And back when he was just a humble millionaire Mormon bishop, he had serving people who worked in their home. And, of course, they had to be Mormons, too. I am so going to chuck this computer right out a window if it doesn't cooperate here. We'll get there. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Ah, come back. But don't think that just because we're talking about Willard, there's nothing else to talk about. Because there's more, there's more morons out there. Now it's going to tell me that the Internet Explorer has stopped working. Oh, don't send me the Firefox emails. I know. But it turns out that back in the early 1980s, when he was just a humble bishop of a Mormon congregation, he had a very special conversation with a lady by the name of Peggy Hayes. Peggy Hayes was pregnant. She already had a child. But Willard didn't like the way that she was pregnant. Because as he explained it to her, the church did not approve because she was unwed. Right? And so Willard, the bishop, Bishop Willard, have we ever had a bishop be candidate for president before? Because we got one now. Bishop Willard told her that what she needed to do was go ahead and birth the baby and turn it over to the Mormon church to be put out for adoption. And she said she didn't want to give up her baby to the church. Miss Hayes, divorced, single mother of two, a babysitter for the Romney's own family. And, you know, she's not being mean about anything. She said Mitt was really good to us. He did a lot for us. But she was pregnant with her second child. Child was going to be born out of wedlock. Wedlock. You know, that sounds like something that happens to you in prison. Lock. Well, the church encourages adoption in cases where a successful marriage is unlikely. And she said, I don't want to give my baby up. He said, well, this is what the church wants you to do. And if you don't, then you could be excommunicated for failing to follow the leadership of the church. And if you're excommunicated from the church, it means you will not go to heaven and you will not see God. In one little Moran Monday episode all by itself, we have enough reasons to make you sweat bullets and know, all the way down to your toenail clippings, that Willard Romney has no business ever getting anywhere nearer the White House than I can get by requesting a tour of same. God, I'm mighty. But it is. It's Moran Monday on the horn. And we got more Morans. And more from you, I hope. You know, the phone lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. You are welcome to join the conversation. I hope you will. Because this is Conversation Radio. So, pick up the phone, light them up, and let's enjoy this here Moran Monday. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, available on a variety of platforms, including HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, WhiteRoseSociety.org, iTunes Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and TuneIn Radio, among others. Listen however you like. But when you do listen, then the trick, the real fun part, is participating. This is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And me, I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back with your calls.
Thank you. looking for something that just ain't there. I don't mean nothing to have no fear. So when you're ready to make a stand, open your mouth and raise your hands. When you're sick of your party, sick of your sweet, get off your asses, I'll see you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. In his visit to Israel over the weekend, Mitt Romney placed a piece of paper with his own personal prayer on it into the Wailing Wall. While the contents of that prayer haven't been released to the public yet, I magically got hold of the text. Here it is. Heavenly Father, thank you for the gift of travel which has distracted the attention of those pesky reporters and their insistence on seeing my tax returns. Heavenly Father, thank you for safely bringing so many of my wealthy donors here to Jerusalem. Heavenly Father, thank you for the Citizens United decision, which allows my supporters to spend so lavishly. Heavenly Father, thank you especially for Sheldon Adelson and for allowing his casino fortunes to swell so he could then share them with me. Heavenly Father, thank you for Benjamin Netanyahu, who worked with me in a Boston consulting firm back in the day. Together with your divine guidance, we'll deny the Palestinians any claim to any piece of the promised land. Heavenly Father, thank you for the Ayatollahs in Iran, who are a perfect foil for my belligerence. And Heavenly Father, please don't let me say any more stupid things on this foreign policy tour. I pray in the name of the Savior, Jesus Christ, who is our mediator with God. Amen. And I hope Sheldon won't mind that last part. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It's 11 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday, this 30th day of July, as we here at The Horn try to get out of July with our hides in high. I don't remember a month as brutal as this any time in the recent past. Let's go straightway to the phones. Agnes, by the way, that's Agnes who's answering the phones this evening. If you call in, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. That's Agnes who will be taking your calls. And it's been kind of wild this last week or so to actually have a producer. Not used to that. But I'm told Sandra is on the line.
Hello?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, wait a minute. I got it. Sorry, bad Bob. There are knobs here I have to deal with, too. Are you there, Sandra?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
I was watching you. Did you watch the opening of the Olympics?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you know, I'll send the thanks out, but, you know, I got some unimpeded link so I can watch it, you know, from the source and could avoid the inane NBC, you know, because I was just thinking, no way are they going to, how are they going to deal with this national healthcare celebration? So I just about, you know, busted a gut when that popped up. I'm like, wow, that was crazy. They did that sort of NHS mixed with children's literature, which I thought was great. It was a great sort of compliment. And, you know, I'm sure the heads were exploding over here, and they still are, as they try to explain away why a country would support their own healthcare system in conjunction with why the conservative candidate is praising universal healthcare. So, you know, people over here must be spinning, and they probably don't know how to, you know what I mean? I guess Americans are just really stupid because if you don't get that you're being just, we're all being totally fucked over here by now, you know, I don't know when you're going to figure it out. Cause
and yet that becomes the operative question, Sandra. There, I saw a story earlier today. There it is, Oklahoma or Oklahoma Stan. And you know, it was a Washington Post story saying that Oklahoma ain't going to have nothing to do with no daggum mandate. They don't want no health insurance.
Okay, well, you know, that's, yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, the place is already getting balkanized. And if we want to balkanize along the lines of dumb, dumber, and dumbest, I guess we can go that route. You know what I mean? Because here in California, I expect the state to embrace every means possible to expand healthcare for the citizens of this state. And there's no reason why we're going to hear any rhetoric like that. I mean, it's absurd. And so I imagine New York is probably the same, you know, maybe Oregon, maybe some of the states on the East Coast, you know, and these other ones, I just feel for the poor people who can't get an exit visa. You understand? Out of Texas, out of Oklahoma, out of wherever.
Alabama. Yeah.
They, you know, they
and,
need
and,
to start
maybe, and maybe even visa. West Virginia.
And Louisiana. Straight exit visa from those places, you know?
Yeah. Because see, the federal government offered Oklahoma $54 million, Sandra, to help them plan for the, you know, plan for the expanded coverage.
Yeah. Well,
and,
no, but
they said no.
No, but what do you call a place that denies you access to services and suppress your vote? I call that, you know, sort of a, on the left, it's a totalitarianism. On the right, it's just fascist. I mean, you don't have any representation there, you know, because they're suppressing your vote. And I don't know. I just, you know, I still can't imagine that as we get closer to the implementing this law, that the pressure isn't going to rise on these freaks. I don't care. I think that you're not talking about whether or not we're going to pick up trash 3 days or a month or something. We're talking about you can survive and live as opposed to not. You see what I mean? It's pretty outrageous that they think they can get away with it within this country. It's not like they're saying, well, look over here in England, they got it, and you guys can't have it. That's just too bad. It's a different country. No. They're going to say, looky over here in California, they got it. You here in Oklahoma can't have it. Too damn bad. I don't see that working too long, Bob. I'm sorry. I have a hard time imagining as it progresses that even citizens in those states aren't going to say, well, you know, wait a minute. You know, what?
I hope you're right.
I could be wrong, but I just think we're thinking in terms of self-preservation sometimes trumps ideology, you know, when you're looking at your sick baby. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the only thing that I would factor into this is, what do you think the odds are, Sandra, that somebody in Oklahoma Stan or Alabama Stan is even going to know that Californians have expanded coverage? I mean,
well,
sure.
No, the sort of information silo is a bit of a problem. I agree. But anyway, I mean, I don't know. And those poor people in Texas, you know, just millions upon millions upon millions of people, this fool is actively bragging about denying all these people. You know, well, they don't have it now, they'll just continue on what they have, you know. I mean, that's the mentality, I guess.
Yeah, which is nothing. So, you know, the question becomes one of, what would it take? You know, I can scarcely even conceptualize a state the size of Texas. But let's take Alabama for instance. What would it take to put a million poor people, or even 100,000 poor people around the state house in Montgomery, Alabama, and say we ain't going nowhere until we get our health care?
Yeah, no, you know what it will take is what it always takes at those sort of movements: some people in the middle who aren't so destitute that they can organize around that. I mean, that's how it always is, you know. You don't, you know, if you're in the depths of poverty, you know, you really don't have much room to do much of that in the way of organizing. So you got to have some sort of middle ground that can, yeah, I don't know. Because those states have been in that situation for such a long time, and, I just would like to think that how these states are going to deprive these people of this. I just don't see how it's going to work, but, you know, maybe they will.
You know, I'm sure I'm not, maybe everybody in our little family knows this, but for instance, I mentioned it on Friday night when Rick Perry was talking about how, you know, the new Medicaid coverage would bankrupt Texas.
It's paid for.
He's a lying sack of dung. It is paid for. All 5 years are paid for, and the next 5 years will be paid for. And for him to say that it would bankrupt Texas, what it would do, frankly, I mean, the word bankrupt is probably appropriately used. What it would do is it would expose the utter moral and ethical bankruptcy of the Republican Party, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, to me, I think that is what is more at stake for them, which is why, you know, they're pulling all the stops out, because they cannot afford to have people see that this can work firsthand. Because once they get it, you know, like right now, listening to these idiots talking about they're going to repeal it, they're already getting pushback from all sorts of people, because people have their kids covered already, the pre-existing is teetering. So Romney's going to what, tell you your kid can't be covered no more, and, oh, by the way, if you had acne, you can't have your health care anymore? No way. You know, how are they going to pull that off? So, you know, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it, but, you know, this country at this point just seems so imbecilic. I don't know. I guess I'm contradicting myself, but it seems crazy, you know. You see the world kind of closing in on you, you know, being able to see different stuff around the world pretty easily. And the facade here, you know, it has to crack some, you know. I mean, look at those idiots on NBC. I mean, it was embarrassing. Just embarrassing. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, that confession, well, you know, our broadcast is for the American audience, and they're not interested in that sort of thing.
They're not interested in seeing the Brits, do a memorial for their 9/11. I mean, I thought that was well out of order. You know, it's incredible how disgusting and arrogant that is. If someone did that about 9/11, you know, they'd be screaming for days, you know?
Oh, no, we'd be flying drones over.
Anyway, yeah, so that was killing me. And then I spent the rest of the weekend, you know, looking at Michelle Obama doing her version of Where's Waldo. That lady was everywhere. It was hilarious. I'm like, oh, snap, there she is at the pool. Ooh, there she is hugging basketball players. And, ooh, there she is at the Air Force Base. I mean, she was everywhere, and it was hilarious.
And it drives the right wing crazy.
Because, listen, that's the upside of the Obama administration is that woman. She is fantastic, and it's just something completely satisfying seeing her ass all over the world as a first lady, doing what she do.
Yeah, and people respond to her extremely positively.
Yeah, I was laughing. I said, oh, she going to hug Coach K, too? And she did. You know, it was hilarious. So, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I really don't know how they are going to manage another term, but good luck to them.
Well, as compared to the alternative, I mean, like I said, that Washington Post headline, Sandra, okay, you got as good a shot at this as I do. What in the world does containment is not an option mean? Because all I can read into it is we're going to war.
Well, yeah, no, it's just absurd. I was just like, damn, this dude. And when you said that, when you talked about there's a toss-up now between him and Bush, no. I'll give Bush credit for at least having a legacy of families that are like quite well versed in foreign policy. And
true.
And whereas Romney, what? Dude is dumber than a bag of rocks with this shit. Culturally, is he crazy out of his mind with that? You know, with that horrible, ugly Sheldon Addison just there. I mean, it's like, dude, you're not even hiding what's going on. There he was at all his secret meetings. And, oh, the headline just a little while ago, Mitt Romney is talking about settlements that should only be talking about in secret, just like the quiet rooms for inequality.
No, it boggles my mind. Just imagine that his advisors are sitting there checking off days like an advent calendar till they get to get him back to America?
I don't know, but he's in Poland now, so God knows what faux pas is awaiting us from this freak there. You know? I don't know. Is he meeting the Pope there or Lech Walesa? I mean, what's he doing in Poland, of all places?
Well, no, I read somewhere, I think it was on Rick Smith's Twitter feed, that labor in Poland is trying to get as far away from him as they can get.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, he's just, I don't really know. But in the meanwhile, though, you know, it's still a toss-up with this election. And the Democrats don't seem to understand that this vote suppression shit is for real.
Yeah.
That's real. And, yeah.
Well, not only is it real, if there's anything to laugh at out of it, and it's not very funny, frankly, is this notion that the governor of Pennsylvania, who signed one of those god-awful voter suppression laws, dude does not even know what's in it. You know, Governor Corbett? He was asked, a reporter asked him this past Wednesday, what forms of identification would be acceptable under his voter ID law. And he said, we've been working with the nursing homes to get new people new ID. It can be military ID. There's two or three other forms right now off the top of my head. I don't have it here in front of me.
Yeah, that's because, they're getting challenged, and you know, which is a good thing in Pennsylvania. So we'll see, because it's all coming out in the wash, you know, just what this is. It had nothing to do with fraud, because they can't even identify not one case in Pennsylvania. So their explanation is what? You know, it's obviously just to keep poor people and anybody who's would trend towards the Democrats not to vote. I mean, that's all it's all about. But
well, wasn't it in Pennsylvania, Sandra, where last week a Romney surrogate said, well, yes, of course the voter ID law will benefit Romney in a close race.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, the only way they win is to keep people from voting. I mean, that's all they got going for them. But, you know, the Democrats are so squishy, they don't even know, they're not even challenging it enough, or they're coming to the party late. They should have been doing this 6 months ago.
Well, for, you know, we through people like Brad Friedman, we've known the perils of video game voting since at least 2003.
Yeah. No, I don't really know.
And there's Democrats out there that still don't know it's a problem.
Yeah, no, but it's a bit of a worry because there, you know, numbers that I've been hearing have been shocking, like, you know, 40% of Philadelphia could be at risk. 40%, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some crazy ass numbers. And anyway, so I don't really know. But, you know, on the other hand, though, if they get this, Trans-Pacific Partnership thing going, you know, it ain't gonna matter too much who the hell is president.
Well, there's more and more of that every day, and that's why I keep pushing this theory of mine, you know, the imperial administrator.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that has to be fought, you know, and I think if, you know, I've been reading outside of the U.S., New Zealand and Australia. I mean, there's a lot of people pushing back on this now because they're seeing that it seriously, like in New Zealand, it will undermine their justice system straight up.
Yeah.
And people are pushing back on it. Australia already said, we ain't doing that investment protection crap. That'll be a no. So as more and more of it comes out, countries are going to resist some of the more odious, especially the U.S. copyright laws. They're like the worst in the world, and no one wants them. So the more we hear about that, the more countries involved in this negotiations are like saying, no, we kind of want to keep our internet open, thanks. So it's, you know, there's some pushback, but not enough, because Obama is really pushing to get a lot of this done before the election, because he knows that labor and other left-leaning organizations aren't going to challenge him while he's running for re-election. It's real sneaky what's going on. That's why.
Yeah, but Sandra, that's a bizarre calculus because, well, is it another one of those moments where labor and so-called progressive groups and gatherings and whatever. That we just support him by default.
Well, no, yeah, I mean what I'm saying.
That's a very cynical approach to electoral politics in an election we think is going to be close.
Well, that's what's going on, because they have another round in September, and it's with any agreement right now, it's fast track, and the only option you have is a up or down. Either you accept the whole agreement or you don't. So if they're able to get the bulk of it negotiated, when it's presented to whatever Congress they present it to, you see what I mean? It's going to be hard to resist. And the thing to do is to you know, put some sunshine on it, because that's how the other ones fell apart. You know, the Doha round, you know, that fell apart because, it was just too much, you know? The agriculture aspect of it was too much for most countries. And it's always the U.S. that wants to completely liberalize everybody's economy. And, you know, they pull back. I mean, even Japan, they want to do the rice like they do in Haiti. And then, you know, the Japanese are like, oh, wait, hold up, you know.
Yeah.
This is all part of this agreement. So, I mean... and this is, they only discovered two chapters of it. So there's 20 in total, and so 18 of them are still under wraps. So we don't even know what the hell is going on. And the one that they released is only from, it's since 16 months ago, if you can wrap your head around this. The one that they're talking about is 16 months ago, and they've been negotiating it ever since. So it's not even the one that is actually being handled. So it's like Kafka.
That's, like something straight out of the trial.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, it's really, I know it's really boring, this subject, but.
Well, no, it's not boring. Well, I guess everything's frightening, isn't it, Sandra?
Well, I'm just so horrified by this because it's, you know, sort of global corporate, you know, control. You know, because once they get this in place, it'll just be a one-size-fit-all, and any country can sort of glom onto it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then on the domestic side of things, I was over on my Facebook page, and you know I guess they announced that Facebook revenues were 31% higher than had initially been forecast after the IPO. So you know Wall Street's very very happy, but it made me start looking at the ads over there on the sidebar, and lo and behold, you know they're using those algorithms to predict what it is that you on your page might want to go and see. So lo and behold, there was an ad on my page saying, do you want the farm bill to be comprised of 78% food stamps? I thought, what? So yeah, that's the right wing's at work out there on that. Oh, who said that? Really, the farm bill is 78% food stamps? I can scarcely credit that. But that's the way they're messaging it.
And Facebook is happily going along with it, right?
Sure, absolutely. Did the check clear? Yeah, okay, run it.
Well, no, but I mean, Facebook, that was the biggest hoax they played on folks in a while, that Facebook business. Man, what a ripoff.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it doesn't show
any sign of letting up.
Well, yeah, but it's unfortunate because all the sort of 2.0 stuff is, you know, not all that great with Facebook, and a lot of the younger people are going to going to different platforms now that they can use off of their phones and iPads and stuff. So the Facebook model is, you know, it's not as durable as you might think. I'm sure there'll always be a social media platform, but, you know, 5-10 years from now, it may not be Facebook.
Did you notice the Twitter news over the weekend?
Oh, no, you know, like I said, and when I tweeted to Isaac, I said, parting is sweet sorrows, because I will say goodbye, for real. I don't care.
Apple is considering buying an ownership interest in Twitter?
Yeah, no, I saw that, and I just, you know, shaking my head thinking, people using this as, like, sort of a public platform, but it's privately owned. And that's a huge problem going forward.
And you know, most people don't. But you're right. They think of it as, you know, this is just their little soapbox, and they can type fixing macaroni and cheese now and send and tweet that out there. But they forget about all the Uniblab 10,000 computers down there in some concrete hardened cave gathering data.
And these platforms are owned by these, and they're getting, you know, it's getting a monopolistic behavior when I hear about Apple trying to get a hold of it. And it's just like, oh, no. Because, you know, I mean, once these companies, you know, because look at what Microsoft did to Skype. I mean, I know it's still useful, but, you know, they got some giant-ass ads. I mean, it's so ridiculous you gotta laugh, you know? You with these platforms, when these companies get a hold of it, all of a sudden it's just sort of, everything is just one big ad. You're just trying to...
But by the same token, MSN finally bailed out of the last little bit of ownership stake that it had in MSNBC. Did you catch that?
Oh, really? So what surveillance circus owns that now?
it's all Comcast now, I guess.
I mean, you know, but the thing it is, because, you know, I'm like, I was talking to Carrie, we were talking about a couple other family members, and I'm like, damn, that kid is 11, what the hell, you know, with the internet presence, you know, it's like, no, these girls, they need to, no, they're not going to be setting up nothing, you understand what I'm saying? It's too much.
It is, and when you
later on, maybe when they're 14, I don't know. I know I'm probably being ridiculous, but I'm sorry. I was looking at, you know, some of the what the little ones are going on about, and it's just like, oh, no. They don't need to have all that. It's the Internet, you know. It's not your private diary.
You'd be surprised how difficult that well, no, you probably won't be. But that is a tough concept to get through with somebody for whom this has always been a reality.
Oh, I know. Well, no, but, you know, I've always, you know, the girls have been around the Internet, you know, and I'm always constantly questioning them about what the hell they're looking at so they can get some semblance of, you know, that it's, you know, that it's not quite right. They need to be, you know, a bit more aware of what they're doing online. So, you know, because Simone the other day, oh, my Gmail, I'm like, oh, no, hell no. And so I had to go and remove that because they pick up this stuff so quickly. I'm like, the Gmail? So it's a battle. It's a battle because, you know, I'm lucky that I spent some time so I know a little bit about it. But, you know, most people my age are like, they run rings around us. Rings.
Yeah. And you're in constant catch-up mode. I mean, I'm still trying. What is this new thing? And it's not even new anymore. I was hearing about it a year ago. I just haven't gone and looked. What is this? Because now I see all the icons all over the place. What is this Pinterest?
Oh, yeah. No, that's just another, it's another platform that I think was sold. I think, Facebook bought it. And, you know, so everyone started fleeing. It's just another platform that's utilizes smaller areas. I mean, it's quite popular. I forget how many millions of people it has, but it's growing. And there's another one that I saw the other day. I can't remember the name. Oh, God, you can just make nonstop videos for every possible aspect of your life and just sort of put it up. And I can't remember the name of it. I'm sure Isaac knows what this is.
Yeah, I've seen a photo one. I saw, yeah. Pinterest. I've never really gotten. I've got a registration over there, but I've never really sorted out Tumblr. And I mean, I don't know. What kind of a life do you have if this is what you do? I mean, between Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and a couple of that there's a photo, that photo one, I can't remember that, and the photo one is the one that Facebook bought, I think.
Instagram. That's right. Yeah, that is the one. But I mean, but those are all, you know, all the sort of, I don't know, so much alternatives. But when you have Facebook trying to buy up stuff, you know that they're kind of worried about new platforms, you know.
Absolutely, and the strangest thing out of all this is that, you know, like you know it is owned by a private company. What, you know, on the one hand, you mentioned copyright earlier, Sandra, and how brutal the American system is in the first place. Well, what happens to copyright for all of these users of these platforms? You know, what happens when a photograph, I mean, and I did it on Saturday, I uploaded a couple of photographs from the anti-fracking rally and tweeted them. What happens to all these photographs on Owly? You know, because that's Hootsuite's little link shortener thing, but it ain't just shortening links, it's going up somewhere.
Well, and I mean, even something as basic as a blog post with links, if those links are, you know, somehow protected, then, you know, what are they going to, like, give an infraction for every time you cache it or you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's sort of unimaginable how they plan on locking down the sort of copyright rules that they want to subject the Internet to. I mean, I don't have any problems with people getting compensated for their creation, you know what I mean? But they are begging if they think they're going to be able to keep track of all this on the Internet as it's constituted now, you know?
Oh, yeah, you conjured Isaac, by the way, Sandra. Oh. He said chatterbait. Kid Rock uses that when Sandra knows about it. Is he kidding?
No, he's not. I don't know. We did see something that was a bit suspect, but yeah.
Chatterbait? C-H-A-T-U-R-B-A-T-E? Really? I mean, Jesus, you know, which one of these is the one where you check off the box and just say, you know, Apocalypse Now?
No, that's, you know, there's some real, you know, real dubious, yeah, it's just all really suspect. So when you have little ones, it's just like, you know? You think YouTube is...
Well, and I remember when there was a social network for little kids that Agnes was constantly riding shotgun on. And it was, what was that one, Ferg? What was the social network that you guys used when you were little? Bebo.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot.
You know, and it's four little kids.
So now
kids.
There's the penguin and these other ones that the girls use, which is, you know, social... game, social media for them, and I'm constantly looking at it to see what's going on. And I don't even understand half the things that are happening. I have to have Simone explain to me the gibberish, and I'm like, OMG.
The gibberish.
But I also am, it's just disturbing because, for example, I'm thinking, you can watch the Olympics online. But then they have you, what cable do you have?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just disgusting. It's like, so you have to prove that you have cable in order to watch the Olympics online.
Yeah, because we wouldn't want people who are just, you know, those antenna Luddites out there. No, can't have that. Dr. John just wrote in, Sandra. He said, Tumblr is a hole. He said, Pinterest seems fairly innocuous. Its prime user base, last I looked, is women mid-aged and a bit below, a group that's not too well represented elsewhere. Tumblr is just awful. Just celebrity crap and people posting GIFs.
Well, that was Flick, you know, with the Yahoo, where you can assemble your photo business.
Yeah.
No, but... I forgot, what were we talking about before you said?
How far back?
Oh, God, never mind. It was something else I wanted to say, but you mentioned... Oh, well.
Well, no, going back to Willard and his cultural superiority, Sandra, the first thing I thought of was... Why not just go ahead and reach over and feel the bumps on Bibi Netanyahu's head and go for some phrenology while he's at it if he's going to use, you know, discredited pseudo-bullshit science from, you know, 100 years ago. That really did just knock me down. That culturally superior?
No, that was incredible. I mean, it was just sort of stunning. It's just the gift that keeps giving with that guy. But listen, just quickly... I'm sorry. What the hell is up with Tim Tebow as Isaac sent, you know, Jimmy got a little bit of bitch in him. I mean, what's happening with Tim Tebow?
I saw that video and I had not seen it. It had been, you know, just lurking around out on the internet for, you know, for a year or whatever. Yeah, but that was, you know, that was a sure enough full on, you know, man mouth kiss. No doubt about it.
Well, did you see the one when he's running in the rain with the shirt off?
Yes.
You know what's happening? You know, I think he's a strange dude.
Wait, stop. Yes. I mean,
you know,
this is...
I realize it's Kadub, but I mean, it's getting stranger.
No, remember, this is a guy whose hobby in his summers off from being a football college god, he spent his summers off going back to the Philippines and assisting in circumcisions. Really?
Well, now he looks like he's getting turned out in West Hollywood and New York, but I don't know what's going on.
And so you know, get the popcorn, because I would say it'll even start in preseason. The right wing fundies are going to be starting up with their crap like they did in Denver. Put in Tebow.
Well, no, but Sanchez, you know, his ass is shaky. he going to get yanked, and they will put Tebow in. That's the thing. And now, I'll be pulling for Sanchez, you know, just on the eye candy tip. But he better try to hang on to his damn job. I
but
it's an ugly old Tim Tebow and his big square head. Damn. I'm not a fan. I don't like that corn-fed shit. I'd rather look at Sanchez.
Big square head. I'm sorry you hurt me. But it's true. It's true.
Oh, my God.
I've seen articles where the fundies talk about how, you know, they're buying their Tebow Jets jerseys and they're out there trying to buy season tickets, and there's going to be a Tebow section. And, you know, if you're the marketing department of the Jets, you're like, yeah, buy more swag. Cool.
No,
yeah, do that.
Why the hell they brought him over there? They're not, you know, they know what comes with him. They're not, yeah, I just think it was just kind of, I don't know how. I haven't really been following Sanchez. I don't know what he's doing, but I know that he was really shaky last year, and they could yank his job from him. You know,
it could get nasty in a hurry, and Lord knows what's going on with that you know, that bizarre coach of theirs. Because
oh, that's right. Well, what's happening with that freaky Peyton Manning? Is his neck still right or what?
Apparently it's checked out, so.
You know, that just looks like a tragedy waiting to happen, and I've got popcorn for that, too. Sorry, but I do.
I'd lay in the apocalyptic supply of popcorn for this coming season.
Then we got Drew Brees with his zillion-dollar contract. I got popcorn for that circus, too. Football, you know, that's going to be crazy because there's a lot of narratives out there this season, and they all messed up. Where's Ocho Cinco? Where that fool at?
No, really.
Where's that? He ain't nowhere, right?
Nope. I don't think so.
So, I mean, yeah, anyway, who knows? I just think that there's a lot of, you know, sort of bad storylines happening right now in the NFL.
And, you know, we're not that far away. We're mercifully on the way out of July. And the NFL stuff is already cranking up.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, this week is August, and they'll be talking it up big time.
And it can't help but be fun. And of course, yeah. You know, August, all, you know, for the college football, and I'm a college football freak, you know that. And it ramps up because, you know, come Labor Day.
Don't you have playoffs? I mean, I'm so out of it. There's playoffs now, right? Or is that...
Yeah, but I haven't fully processed how it works.
It's four, isn't it? It's like it's four teams, yeah?
Yeah. But is that encompassed within the bowl system, or is it external to it?
I don't know, but fuck you, Boise. Bye-bye. Whatever that other school is in Texas.
No. We're not gonna have any of those outliers, interlopers, or anybody. No.
They all done. Listen, you know who may come out good with this, though, is that horrible Notre Dame, you know?
Oh.
But anyway, I don't know all the ins and outs. I've just heard and read bits and pieces.
It would be kind of nice if they would investigate Notre Dame's little rape problem, but I guess that's just asking too much.
Oh, please. I mean, they can only deal with one horror school at a time, and that's Penn State right now, right?
Yeah.
And listen, I'll let you go. You know, this has been a completely pointless shallow conversation, so thanks so much for that, Bob.
Yeah, but you know what? It's what Mondays are for, Sandra.
Yeah, no, you got to keep that circus music going. That was great that you had it playing for a while because it was so perfect for what you were talking about. Oh, my God.
I keep saying, you know, oh, it's a really big Moran Monday, lots of Morans, oh, it's really weird. No, this one, like I said, I don't think we've ever had a Willard Romney Memorial Moran Monday. But, I mean, he just came up and walked away with it.
No, but the thing that I'm still trying to recover from, you know, I'm not a David Cameron fan, but damn, he bitch slapped him into next week with that comment about, well, you trying to put on an Olympic in the middle of nowhere. I was like, oh my God, that was so damn funny. Okay.
Yeah, only because it was true.
Because that was he slapped Romney in the mouth with that comment.
And he had it coming.
That's
one of those politics at the water's edge moments too, because you know David Cameron, he's a conservative, but again, conservative over there, if I understand correctly, is not the same as conservative over here.
No, and the thing about that whole comment, it was one of the ones where someone just asked and Cameron just rolled out. You see, that's what Mitt Romney do to people. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the business about someone asked, I forget who it was, they asked, well, will Mr. Romney be carrying the torch? And the answer came, not now, he won't, not now.
And he sold his wife under the bus. Oh, I don't know what she's doing. She over there with her horse. I don't know nothing about it. Remember that? I was like, yeah. Damn, fool.
Yeah, horse? What horse?
What horse? Who? What? I look over here. I'm going into the swimming. I mean, dude was. I guess the White House was probably like going, OMG, what? You know. And they said today, well, we was kind of scratching our heads on his culture comment. Did you see that from the White House?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like I'm sure Obama's just sitting back, sending out his missives, and just sitting back.
You know what? If I was him, that is exactly what I'd be doing.
Oh, my God. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go. Have a good evening.
All right. Take care, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Sandra calling from California. It's fun to wander all over a little bit from time to time. But, I mean, I was halfway expecting Willard to be seen, you know, rubbing a little Palestinian's head for luck or something. Like, that's... This guy is from a different century, and I don't mean the 20th. And if I was a Romney advisor, I'd have me a little advent calendar just praying to get for the day to come when he could get back to America and they could safely hide him from, you know, the media over here who are more pliable, more compliant. But you know, how bad is it when Greta Van Plastic Surgery says that the press, and she's on the bus, you know, in Israel, when she says that the press are being treated like a petting zoo? That's Fox saying that. Ooh. Yeah, but no, there's lots of Moran Monday stuff out there. Let's see. We got a horse's rear end in the form of Dane Cook. You know who Dane Cook is? Yeah, because he had an Aurora joke. Because it's not too soon for Aurora jokes. Hell no. And then this one kind of, you know, it was one of those of course moments. Those folks out there who are forever studying what the media cover. The University of Delaware did one, and the University of North Carolina did the other. University of Delaware analyzed the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver. Men's sports got 23 hours of primetime coverage, a little less than 13 hours of primetime coverage for women. That's the Delaware study. The other study, University of North Carolina, they looked at the 2008 Summer Games and previous years. In the Summer Games, I guess women get a little bit more close to equal time. 46.3% of airtime went to women in 2008 and 47.9% in 2004. But here's the kicker. In the Summer Games, the coverage was extended primarily to what the researchers called socially acceptable sports for women. And those socially acceptable sports for women primarily include the sports in which there is minimal clothing. The study found that nearly three-quarters of the women's coverage was devoted to gymnastics, swimming, diving, and beach volleyball. The Think Progress story that I'm looking at right now features a photograph of gold medalist Mariel Zagunas, who took the gold in fencing.
Oh, no, we certainly can't have any primetime coverage of women with swords. That makes us guys all kind of fidgety and cringy where we cross our legs a lot. Swords?
So, nearly three-quarters of the women's coverage was gymnastics, swimming, diving, and beach volleyball in this 2008 and 2004 study. Track and field, where the clothing is almost as minimal, made up another 13% of the women's primetime coverage. And the remaining sports represented, rowing, cycling, and fencing, are not, by traditional standards, according to the study, socially acceptable sports for women and make up approximately 2% of coverage. So let's see. Let's recap here. Some women's teams had to fly in steerage while the men's teams flew first class. Who was that? That was, Japan and Australia? Even though the women's teams were more highly ranked and more respected. And now we find out that, lo and behold, women get covered if they're going to be scantily clothed. You got to figure that drives the Saudis a little bit crazy. That was the other thing I noticed out of the opening ceremonies. And here's the Saudi Arabian team. You know, they're going to have a woman compete for the first time this year. By God, she wasn't in the opening ceremonies that I could see. If I missed her, I'll own up to it, but I didn't see her. Jeebus. So I guess that's our Olympic coverage. God. We'll take a little break and come back. Light up the phones. We got another hour or so. You know the number, 877-443-2366. Direct dial without the toll-free is 304-658-3333. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice with the emphasis on listener-supported. We are trying to get out of July. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. And the last I checked over the weekend, we need to bring in $150 just, you know, just to mercifully put July behind us and start fresh in August. So that's where we stand. 15 folks at $10 apiece. And it sure would help. It sure would help. So we'll come back and go to the phones. If you're on hold, please stay that way. Like I said, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Jess Levin. This morning, Fox News' Stuart Varney tried to drum up a fake controversy over General Motors. He distorted the facts to claim that GM was, quote, in crisis since 93% of their car loans are made to buyers with less than stellar financial records. Here's Varney.
They've got this new report. 93% of the loans that General Motors is making to buyers are going to subprime risky buyers. 93%. And as of right now on Wall Street, the stock is below $20 a share. It has to be at 53 before they can repay all of that money. So they can't repay the government loan to them. They can't exit from bankruptcy. And President Obama's...
While it is true that 93% of auto loans financed through GM Financial went to subprime lenders, GM Financial accounts for only about 8% of GM's total financing. For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Into the storm. Been through the hail fall. Yet you still couldn't
Head-On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then, 9 minutes past the hour. Our last night in D.C. for a while here at the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. You can learn everything you need to know about the AIC Act and the AIC campaign by going to AICACT.org, A-C-H-E-A-C-T.org. You can take action. You can encourage your member of the House of Representatives to sign on to the AIC Act, and we, in turn, will follow up here in D.C. Either I will or my colleague Bo will. It'll get the job, will get done. And a reminder, when you call in, unlike when I'm back in the home studio there at the mansion, Agnes is actually taking your calls. That's her that you hear on the phone. And it's kind of nice to know who's on the line for a change. And we have Mike calling from PA. Just one second. Let me get the music killed. This is one of those complications. Are you there, Mike?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm holding up, I think.
Awesome. Well, hey, did you happen to get my email from a couple of days ago about the folk festival thing?
I'll be honest with you. I probably did, but right off the top of my head, I can't. Give me a reminder. Tickle it for me a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine. I figured you're busy. My wife is from Parkersburg, and every Labor Day weekend, her father puts on kind of a big folk music type festival in their backyard. They live just outside Parkersburg in Mineral Wells.
Right.
And
I know the area well.
Yeah. It's been going on for like 4 years. It's not huge, but every year we probably have between 500 and 1,000 people come in, you know, across the 3 days. And I talked to him about it, and we wanted to invite you guys or somebody from Coal River Mountain Watch or the 8 campaign or somebody to come up and talk about what you're doing.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, and I do remember it now. It just took a minute. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be. Well, I'm white-headed now, but I used to be a blonde, and sometimes I'm still dippy.
No problem. That's all right.
But we would love to be there, and we would mm-hmm. love to find and hopefully get some people in, because you know one of the things, Mike, that would be really helpful is if we could actually get the elected representatives from West Virginia to act like they gave a damn. And the only way that's ever going to happen is if we've got a bunch of people advocating for them to do so.
Exactly. That'd be David McKinley, as you know. And every time I'm down there and I open up the Parkersburg paper, there is one letter or another from him or somebody in his office about, you know, Obama's war on coal and all that crap, and I'm thinking the only way that's going to change is if he starts hearing from, you know, it's one thing for me to call from Erie, but if we get a bunch of people calling from Parkersburg, you know,
yes.
pay attention to this, you know, I think that's the only way that's ever going to change. So.
And you know, you're right, Mike, and it should be noted that there is a demographic difference in this state. The West Virginia below the Little Kanawha River is a very different place from West Virginia north of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we've got a chance at changing hearts and minds north of the Little Kanawha that might be not, I won't say it'll be easy, but it might be less difficult than some of the work that we try to do down in the southern areas of the state. It's the absolute truth.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I haven't spent a lot of time in the southern part of the state, but I have spent a little bit. And, you know, my wife had some relatives who until recently lived near you. Thank God they are just so different from her family, you know. But I'll say this, as progressive as her family is, and I don't mean to puff myself up and take credit here, until I started learning about it, they had no idea what was going on with mountaintop removal. Right. You know, they knew coal mining, they knew black lung, they know southern West Virginia kind of, you know, sorry, not to be stereotypical, but, you know, they knew the stereotypes. But they had no idea they were blowing the tops off of mountains and poisoning people. And then I learned about that. My father-in-law and I drove down to see March Fork Elementary, and we hiked up to an MTR site. We didn't get very close. We sort of hiked up the mountain adjacent, which for all I know isn't there anymore, and looked out and just saw this incredible wasteland. And the trip home was incredible because, you know, he'd lived there all his life. My father-in-law grew up in Lewis County, and then, yes, you know, they moved to Wood County, and, you know, he thought he knew West Virginia. He said it. He said, I thought I knew West Virginia, but I had no idea this was going on. So,
no, it is almost as though they are two very, very separate and distinct states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, in those areas, though, of course, they're dealing with the ravages of fracking. And,
yep,
you know, people would ask me last Saturday about fracking. You know, I'd say, are they already doing it in West Virginia? And, oh, yes, because where at least some legislators, and, you know, we've got a couple, but they're almost, I hate to say it, microscopic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, where other states at least have a few people who will stand up about it, West Virginia is wild. There are less regulations dealing with fracking than there are with mountaintop removal, and we already know what a corrupt nightmare mountaintop removal is. So
yeah, oh yeah, I believe it. Yeah, and we're going through that up here in northwestern Pennsylvania too. I mean, they're fracking the crap out of counties just adjacent to where I live in Erie County. It's going on in Erie County, but it's not as obvious. I don't think it's as common. But I work one county south, and it's everywhere down there. And you go east a little bit, and they're fracking in the Allegheny National Forest. So, yeah, that's happening up here, too.
Well, and Mike, I'm absolutely interested in this Labor Day event. Just make sure that you get me the particulars, and I'll talk to some of our other campaigners, and we'll try to find a way to be up there.
Okay, I'll email you all the information. It would be
a real honor and a privilege.
Cool. Well, we'd love to see you. We'd love to have you.
And I'm pretty doggone sure I'd love the music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, my in-laws have their own group, and my wife is an alto in it. So, yeah, since I met her, I've been kind of marinating in that music and just loving it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a nice marinade.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I got to get back to work here, but I just wanted to touch base with you. And now that I know you're interested, I'll email you. And
yeah, let's call the details.
I'm also going to talk to my father-in-law. Yeah, and I'm also going to talk to my father-in-law about possibly inviting some of the local representatives, and you know, whether they be city or state level people. I know he has. A couple of the local people have showed up at one time or another. We've never had a congressman there, but you know, we could try.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
All right, Wyatt. Well, keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
You too.
And Agnes, let's keep it rolling. We've got Larry calling in from California.
Hi, Bob. It's Larry Buchholter from Horn Chat and Malloy Chat.
Awesome. Thanks for calling in, Larry. I appreciate it.
Hi. I just want to let you know that you wanted me to notify you and write something up for Coal River Mountain Watch. Concerning the effort that I made to go to see Barbara Lee to give her the information about the AIC Act so that she would sign, be a co-signer on the bill. And I mentioned that I had gotten up, I talked with you on the 13th of July, and I said that I was going to go to Oakland the next day during, she was having a birthday fundraiser, and my attendant got me up and helped me get dressed. And luckily it was a very warm day, so I just got in my wheelchair. I have a motorized wheelchair here in Berkeley. We're lucky to be able to have the ability to have a lot of people with disabilities here who can live somewhat independent lives. So I got up and I rolled myself down to the fundraiser, went down to the downtown Berkeley BART station and got on the BART, which is our version of a subway. And went down, it was about a 10-minute ride, and then I rolled over. I got down to downtown Berkeley on the, got down to 19th Street BART, and rolled down to the auto repair shop where the fundraiser was being held, and I ran into one of the people at the door, so to speak, at the entrance, and talked to somebody on her staff, and recognized somebody that I know very well on her staff, Sandra Andrews, who came out and said, after I had already shown this other person that I didn't know a copy of the AIC Act, and Sandra, who's a good friend of mine, said, well, we can't do this now because this is a fundraiser, but we'll take the envelope with the bill, and we'll take it, and we will have it on Monday morning, and we will send it off to D.C. with a request from you that Congresswoman Lee co-sign on the 5959, H.R. 5959. You know, the Kucinich bill that tries to put a moratorium on mountaintop, any further mountaintop removal until we have some health studies to show what the health effects are on the people of Appalachia who are suffering from decades and centuries of being exploited by the coal companies. So so luckily, I don't know what day that she actually did sign it, but I'd heard from Duncan, who is one of our chat people on the Horn chat and also on the Malloy chat, that Barbara Lee did in fact sign the bill,
and she did so almost immediately after that weekend, Larry, which just, you know, that was awesome.
Well, you know, we're very lucky here in Berkeley, Oakland area to have such progressive people. We're really, really lucky. We're lucky to have your program, the Horn program, the Bob Kincaid show. We're lucky to have the Mike Malloy show and have people as progressive as you both are. We're lucky to have the Horn chat and the people on Horn chat and also the people on the Malloy chat who are always pushing for what I consider to be the right thing and the most cogent arguments for progress in this society. And I just felt that it was something that needed to be done because for decades and decades, the people of Appalachia, although I've never been to your neck of the woods, I've heard that they've suffered some tremendous poverty, poverty that I wouldn't even be able to conceive of if I were to experience it. So I felt that it was important for me to try to do something, since I'd already mentioned to you that I would try to do that, and I knew that Congresswoman Lee would come through for us. And so that's why I did it. Somebody, you know, you needed to have people from this part of the country trying to fight the battle for you. So, you know, I felt that I needed to do that for you, Bob. I really
did. I hope you know, and it sounds like you do, Larry, what a huge thing it was that you did. One of the things that I suggested to Sparky is that if we can get that somehow committed to print, I talked to my colleague Bo. I want to get that up on the website so people can see what this kind of determined activism looks like. Because it, as far as I'm concerned, Larry, what you did was heroic.
I'm just lucky to have as much mobility and as much independence as I have here in the Bay Area, and that we have a climate in the Bay Area that's conducive to the support of independent living and the disability rights movement. And I don't know what the situation is like in other parts of the country, because quite frankly, I've lived in a bubble here in Berkeley for the last 37 years. So I don't quite frankly know how other people would view the act of my doing that, but for me, it was something that I really felt that I needed to do, and it was something that, you know, you needed to know, and Bo needs to know, that there are people out here listening, and there are people out here that care, and they don't just simply reside in your particular you know, neck of the woods. There are people out here that try to understand what other communities are going through. It was important for me to be there for you and to be there for to the extent that I could. I'm hoping that the bill will pass, and I'm hoping the bill will be signed. I really hope so. And I hope that this is just the start of a series of bills which will ultimately, in some way or another, shape public policy in a way that will ultimately help the people of Appalachia and help the people around the country try to turn back some of the environmental policy and the kinds of degradation that the large energy companies either wittingly or unwittingly, mind you, I'm going to even put in the term unwittingly there, because I don't want to necessarily blame or point fingers to any one particular person or any one group. I'd like to try to be a diplomatic and tactful. But I think that it's important for the ways in which we look at the environment in this society, for us to be able to change that, and maybe some of the power dynamics and some of the dynamics of the social and economic institutions can change in such a way to help not only people in the inner city, where, you know, I live north of Oakland, but also people who are stuck in rural situations where they just don't, you know, where they have no way to organize and fight back in any kind of consistent, very forceful way. And I would like to try to change that on some level. So if this signing, getting Barbara Lee to co-sign on this bill and getting more representatives to co-sign on this bill is the start of a momentum that provides some hope for people in the society that they really can change things, I hope I was able to do something in that way, Larry, you did
more than you know. I wouldn't be engaged in this, and Bo wouldn't be engaged in this, and my family wouldn't be engaged in this if it was some sort of symbolic act. We recognize the realities of what this Congress is, but by the same token, we hope that it will not always be this way, and we felt like we had to get started soon and begin setting the table for a day when justice might actually come visiting Appalachia, and that, you know, this would be a critical component of that. The other part of that, though, Larry, is that what you've done and what this advocacy has done, it's our hope that by putting this bill forward, that we are providing a template whereby other tormented and tortured peoples can speak up as well. Because, you know, ultimately that's what the answer is going to be. The answer, and I'm not trying to be overly negative, but the fact of the matter is, I'm sure you know that old saying that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Believe me, I've done it. So I know.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an attempt to do it differently. And so consequently, we want to hope that it has a greater potential for success. And if it does, then we have sort of shown a light and provided a methodology whereby others can take this forward. And you know, I'm not taking credit for anything. I'm really not. But I heard things at this anti-fracking rally this past Saturday that were incredibly inspiring and impressive to me, because lo and behold, here we are talking about issues of environmental degradation, but it seemed like there was finally a clear consensus understanding that the reason for objecting to these predatory practices is entirely wrapped up and described by the effect that this stuff has on abilities of human beings to go on living in the place where they live.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly correct.
And that's ultimately the definition of environmental justice.
Well, you also know, as a person with a disability who was born with cerebral palsy, I was born 3 months premature, and luckily I have a good brain, or a decent brain, and I'm able to get around, but there are so many people in my situation across the country that don't have the ability to live independently outside of their family's homes. That, you know, not that living in a family is one, if you have a family that's really supportive and really pushes you outward and your parents are activists, that can be a real help. But there are so many people in the society with my type of disability and people that are shut-ins or families that just don't have the money. Imagine an Appalachian family that has a disabled child or has a disabled son or daughter. What's the, what are the chances of them being able to provide, you know, a decent or really, really good, other than, you know, providing the support that a lot of families can provide? And I've heard that in countries where there are people that are poor, like Latin America and what have you, the culture is such that the family is really important. Well, maybe the family life in Appalachia for these young people, people with disabilities and such, might be, you know, you might be able to take care of each other and have a strong family bond. The other part of it is that what is their life going to be like outside, and how are they going to be able to get, you know, outside of that when they have to be able to live an independent life? And if you come from a family that has some means and some, means of support, that can help. If you live in a state that has decent income and you know, social welfare supports, as California has had, we don't know what's going to happen, Bob, in the coming years with what's happening with the budget problems that we're having in California. But I can only imagine that we're having problems in California, you're having unimaginably tough situations where you are in West Virginia. And I want people to know in West Virginia that Jay Rockefeller just wrote a letter to Kathleen Sebelius talking about what the effects of putting people into managed care processes would be. And Jay Rockefeller, I don't know if he's the governor of West Virginia anymore. Is he?
No, he is an ex-governor, but he is now the senior senator from West Virginia.
Okay. Well, he wrote a letter to Kathleen Sebelius talking about what the effect of being put on some kind of a managed care program would mean, I assume, primarily for the people with disabilities and also frail elderly and senior folks, and also people that are forced to be on some kind of welfare. They're forced to receive some kind of welfare, either Medicaid or Medicare in your state, and people that are dependent upon that, what the effects of being on an HMO, a managed care program, would be. And CMS is involved with the whole process of whether or not they want to expand that program. But, you know, the effects of getting back to the effects of environmental degradation, the environmental degradation not only affects frail elderly and seniors and people with disabilities, it affects the entire country. And I'm worried because I don't know whether or not we're going to be able to turn around the general framework in this society or the general paradigm of how we look at environmental issues enough to be able to, you know, in the next few years, to be able to forestall some major crisis and when the situation happens, like what happened, you know, our friend Tim from L.A. with Fukushima,
yes.
I don't know whether or not people are going to be able to are going to have the resources to be able to cope with an environmental situation coming down in the next 30 years, because they've been living either in such denial or they've been so badly educated as to what's really going on. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, do you?
When you were talking about Jay Rockefeller, you know, he didn't bring up mountaintop removal when he did it, but he issued a blistering condemnation of the coal industry's intransigence and its propagandistic so-called Obama war on coal language about a month ago. And it was profound. I mean, it was earth shaking in Appalachia. But he's always been very good on health care issues and patient rights. And one of the thing, you know, one of the reasons he was motivated, I can't speak for him, but I would speculate, Larry, that one of the reasons he was motivated to write was because he, as the senior senator from West Virginia, has a constituency that is among the most disabled in the United States. Because we don't have a lot of sit down work in West Virginia to this day. We've got a lot of back breaking, a lot of bone breaking labor, and people are destroyed before they're ever even old. So, you know, that's some of the reality that we're dealing with. And so I imagine that is probably, you know, that's probably what motivated him, and I'm glad it did. I mean, you've got to remember, and we're not just talking about Appalachia, but you know, one of the key and central studies that is fueling HR 5959 is this birth defect survey.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're talking about a statistical analysis of 1.8 million live births in Appalachia. So that doesn't even count miscarriages and stillbirths,
mm-hmm.
which can also be impacted by mountaintop removal. But the rates of respiratory birth defects, the rates of neurologic birth defects are through the roof as compared to non-mountaintop removal communities. Mm-hmm. So maybe this even represents an indirect means for him to begin the process, because for an Appalachian or a West Virginian, be they Democrat or Republican, public servant, to take on this issue is going it's going to be a monumental effort. Even Senator Byrd couldn't begin to address it until he was very, very near the end of his life. And even in his old age, he was vilified, Larry, by the coal industry. Because at this point in time, the coal industry in Appalachia is no longer a business. It's no longer an industry. It is, in fact, a received wisdom. It is it is an orthodox religion that one may not criticize.
In other words, if you've got a, like, for instance, certain people politically here in the Bay Area, although they may not realize it, you know, they're like sacred already. So nobody is going to criticize, you know, nobody is going to criticize a certain person. Not that they would deserve criticism, but when you've got people, when you've got an institution, or when you've got a particular person in office, I'm not going to, I shouldn't name any names, but there's somebody from North Carolina that was in for a very long time, and also somebody who was in, South Carolina. For a very long time, you know, nobody wants to criticize those people, and they're beyond reproach. But I have to tell you that, maybe HR, you've got a very, very staunch friend in Barbara Lee. She really, I don't want to say, that she's the only person.
Hopefully she'll be able to bring on more members of the California delegation. And if it turns out that California is the state that leads the fight for justice for Appalachian people, then I'm happy to have it. I'm glad somebody is. And that's frequently the way that history works out in this country, that people who are oppressed in one place find themselves being advocated for not by their own elected representatives, but by people from other regions. And that may be how it shakes out with California. You know, I'd love to have Pete Stark on this bill. I'd love to have Bob Filner on this bill. I'd love to have Henry Waxman on this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason any of them shouldn't be on it by now.
Mm-hmm. Where did on a different tack, where do the majority of independent living people with disabilities, people that are lucky enough to get out of, lucky enough if they wish to get out of their community and live independently, where would I find them in your state? Would they be living in Charleston, or where would they be living?
Their best chances would be, you heard perhaps Mike mention Parkersburg. It's very hard to live independently in rural West Virginia, Larry. It's There is so little infrastructure here that it is something approaching impossible. So my answer to your question would be the population centers, Huntington, Charleston, Beckley, not so much. Morgantown, yeah, because among other things, there's a very small rapid transit system there. Parkersburg, possibly. And because it's very near, you know, it's only a two-hour train ride, because it's very near D.C., I would say probably Martinsburg.
I see. Well, maybe it's a good way to get, maybe I can get in touch with some of the folks there and see if we can't develop some way of, you know, organizing using, you know, with Coal Mountain River Wash. And but, you know, you've got really, really good people out here in, you know, in Oakland and Berkeley, and we do care. We've got our own issues, but we do care. And the people that are listening to you, I want to let everybody know that listens to the Bob Kincaid Show and everybody that listens to the Mike Malloy Show, if you're not aware of how lucky you are to have both of these people to be able to give you the perspective that they do, I want to say that you're very, very lucky, because these two folks are special as far as I'm concerned. And they're few and far between in this country, and we need more of them, and we need more, we need Bob and Mike to be able to reach a wider audience, and I wish that I could do something to provide that ability, but I'm not in that position, and I'm also very grateful.
Larry, you just did. That's the most ringing endorsement that I've received in a very, very long time.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say thank you to my folks on the horn chat, and also to my folks on the Malloy chat. You know, people can come on and be with us if they wish to on Friday. Well, for the Malloy chat on Friday nights, they're welcome to come on if they wish to do that. We've got a wonderful group of people. I really enjoy being with them. We've got people from all over the country and people from Canada. And we're a really good group of folks, and I appreciate them, because without their support, and there are a lot of times when I need those people in that chat room to be supportive of me. So I'm really thankful to all of you guys, and Sparky and Bob Lottie, Robert Lottie and Texas Betsy and the people that help you out on your show. And then some of the people, there are people that are too numerous to mention, Tim from L.A. and Cosmic Michael and so on and so forth. And all of you are really important people, and all of you really do a lot to provide a space for people, and I appreciate all of you. But when you were telling me about the stillbirths and the births, statistics in West Virginia and what have you, that's just another reason why it's absolutely fundamentally important to get H.R. 5959 passed.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing from you. And I've been given to understand you're going to have some help as far as like a written version of your account. And I can't wait to see it and get it up on the website. Thank you for everything you've done. Thank you so very much.
Well, before I go, I want to say if I've missed any names of people on chat, on either the Malloy chat, the Malloy chat actually during the show is much larger than our Skype chat, but if I've missed anybody on Skype chat, and I also want to give a shout out to people on Horn Chat and on Malloy chat during the show, but if I've missed anybody, I'm really sorry, because you all are important, okay? So that's what I want to let you know. And Bob, you're really, you know, Bob, you and Mike are gems, you know.
Thank you, Larry. So thank you very kindly. I hope we'll talk soon. You take care.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see. Man, that's just mine. Thank you. The kind words like that don't come along very often. And I hope you're as inspired by what Larry said as I am. It is goodwill like that, and good heart and good spirit like that, that actually will result in justice in a tormented place like Appalachia. Thanks, Larry,
And thanks to all of you who are doing your part to see H.R. 5959 grow in strength and in awareness. Thank you. Agnes, do we still have Mark from Florida on the line?
You do, Bob.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's very difficult to follow that last call.
Yeah, you'll do just fine, I know you.
Yeah, I just like to say that when I tell people how proud I am to be a Democrat, that we won World War II with a leader that was in a wheelchair. And Larry, I hope he knows that I can't even know. Anyway, I also like to let him know that the physical devotion that he contributed to running down Barbara Lee for soldiers that get the Medal of Honor, a lot of them are already wounded and they're going to die, so they do dramatic behavior, and that's kind of what he represents. I'm not saying that he's punching out. What I'm saying is he took physical, spiritual, and emotional courage and combined them, which is what Democrats do.
Indeed.
I can't talk, Larry, but I mean Bob, but I guess I'll I just wanted to say something about this weak attempt on the behalf of the I don't know who these lack of courageous people are from. I don't know where it's coming from, but you take Romney and the day before, what a weak, shallow attempt it was to complain about Israeli athletes getting slaughtered at Munich. And even as a child, a pretty bright 12 or 13 year old I was, I thought, why aren't the Germans a little harsher on their approach to these supposed terrorists and whatever they were? The Germans were pretty rough on them. They shot the shit out of them when they ended up on their helicopter, but they, from a public relations standpoint, they didn't slaughter them when they encountered them at the hotel where they killed the Israeli athletes. But I don't know why. I just try to grow up with an ability to try and interpret, not just get swayed by feelings and emotion and propaganda. So here, a day before the Olympics are supposed to start, where any country that's wealthy enough to participate can send their athletes to participate in either two categories or 200 of them, you know, in a peaceful athletic way for a medal. And they talk about the significance of the Munich attack, but then that fell over. I mean, that made it to the news. So it's just a weak propaganda attempt, and then the jackass goes to the wall, and whatever that's all about, and still trying to drum that right wing, ginning up the base of the evangelical right, who really never has cared for Jews or Catholics or black people in the South. And I find it so.
I think you got it spot on. Exactly. This is, nestled down inside all of this is an attempt to code talk to the fundamentalist, millennialist, end times, apocalyptic, Armageddon, believing, Bible thumping that he can be trusted to try to do everything in his power to drag Jesus right down out of the sky and right down here so that they can get down to the business of converting the Jews. Now, the problem, Mark, is that if that ever happens, then the Mormons are going to have it out with the fundamentalist Christians first to find out who gets to convert the Jews. It's a hell of a... I mean, if you really dig down into the crazy, it gets to be a real mess.
Well, that actually... it shows you that apparently... neither group or nor of many groups do they do much digging down, but I mean there's so much contradictoriness that it just doesn't make any common sense. But Romney, here he is also threatening to attack Iran. It's like one religious extremist who doesn't really believe in Jesus threatening another religious extremists that may not believe in Jesus. I really don't know, but you know, and it's often quoted, and we'll probably hear a little bit more of this closer to the election, Bob, that how Ahmadinejad had threatened Israel's existence. But I listened to an American Farsi professor on Democracy Now. He said that's
yeah, and that's not what he said.
That's correct. That's correct. So we just promulgate.
But you know, God forbid the American for-profit media should make those kinds of distinctions. I mean, it's kind of like that, and it was such a telling moment in the opening ceremonies where, you know, there was 2.5 seconds of a Palestinian Olympic athlete, it was as if NBC had screwed up, and they cut away from him to a break without even so much as a "we'll be back" from Bob Costas. They just had to get him off the screen.
Oh, you saw that, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't catch. I wondered if you caught the just tonight. They showed people in Poland as Romney's little entourage. Did you catch that, where they were shouting Obama's name, a large, pretty large group at him?
No.
Yeah,
I did see one report that said that he had been met by a very large Ron Paul sign.
Well,
which is you know, disturbing in its own right, but no, if they're in Poland chanting Obama.
yeah.
You know, maybe it's like Sandra said. Maybe President Obama is just sitting back and you know, letting them come unglued. Because I mean, really, I know this is probably the third time I've said it, Mark. But if I'm some Romney advisor, I'm you know, Jesus, we got to get him home. I can't wait till this is over. I mean,
yeah,
for the rock and roll metaphor is that he really has walked out in Detroit and said hello, Cleveland, to the arena audience.
Right, and in those cities so close, they would know the difference. But I just wanted to say that, and obviously, that, you know, it's no big surprise to the people who listen to the show, but for the fellow right-wingers who might listen to the translated transcript. But, you know, here he is tap dancing to Sheldon Adelson before he goes to whatever world federal prison that might be, and then he's tap dancing to the Koch brothers. So, you know, he's in Adelson's Israel, and he's tap dancing to the Koch brothers, and then... for Larry and for anybody that I'm sure anyway that doesn't know, but for every wheelchair ramp there is in the country, I would like to attribute it to United States Senator Tom Harkin, a former naval aviator and a Democrat from the great state of Iowa, the whitest state in the country that voted the most for the black president. My fellow neighbor, Iowa. His brother is crippled, and made that a reality. So I just find that interesting that there's another attribute to Democrats. But anyway, I just want to hang up and listen to the rest of your show, Bob. But Larry, your call and the struggle that you went through, and the community that listens to you, we understand that it takes a lot. Physically. So, Bob, thank you for being there.
Thank you, Mark, for being there.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Mark calling from Florida. There's about 7 minutes left in the program. I'm going to check in here with Agnes and see if there's any... Nope. Okay. I guess that'll pretty much wrap things up, both for the evening and for this broadcast endeavor from Capitol Hill. Wait. Okay, gotta check with the boss. Okay, yeah. Me too, Agnes, me too. Larry brought tears to Agnes's eyes. And I hope I'm not telling tales out of school, and I hope she won't be upset at me. But part of the reason for that is because Agnes knows and had family members who were profoundly disabled, one of whom she recently lost. And so she knows exactly what it is to try to deal with disability in a state like West Virginia. And the answer is, it is awfully, awfully difficult. It is difficult enough as it is. It is brutally difficult. You know, the geography makes it hard enough. But the geography coupled with everything else that goes with life and do you understand? It breaks my heart to describe West Virginia as a place that is dysfunctional. But I can't get behind this microphone and just tell you everything's okay, because it's not. And the number of birth defects and the number of critically misshapen and malformed and ill-formed internal organs that happens, you know, because a coal company hasn't figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses yet, and that however much wealth you store up on Earth means absolutely nothing in the measure of a life. And for that reason, we have to have more birth defects in West Virginia. We have to have more heart disease. We have to have more tragic early deaths. We have to have more five-year-olds who don't get to be six-year-olds. All for nothing but coal company profits. You know, you want to know how brutally dysfunctional West Virginia is? There are 20 young people right now. There are 20 young people in jail. On Saturday, while I was up here at the anti-fracking rally and up here working on AIC stuff, 20 young people went to the largest mountaintop removal site in southern West Virginia and locked themselves down to equipment and engaged in civil disobedience to make that mine shut down, if only for a matter of hours. They were arrested. They were hauled away. They were charged with misdemeanor trespass and misdemeanor obstruction of an officer in the execution.